It's time to tune up your taste buds and take a trip to culinary heaven, because we're live from Jasper's Kitchen, presented by Hen House. Sit back, relax, and enjoy something new from the wonderful world of delicious cooking with our favorite chef, Jasper Marabli, and his co-host, food journalist, Kimberly Stern.
Kimberly, it's Halloween weekend.
Your favorite, Jasper, and you know how I am absolutely obsessed. You know what I'm going to say? Obsessed with your cannoli costume.
Oh, everybody, come on. You know me. I'm going to be ringing that doorbell, probably scaring all the kids away. This big old cannoli walking down the street.
Does Lisa have one?
No.
Like Mr. and Mrs. Cannoli
or
something?
She follows me around with the ball and chain. Don't worry about that. That's a whole nother story. But Kimberly, I'm talking Halloween weekend. The pumpkins are still available here at the Hen House Market.
There's $12 for 3 pumpkins.
Come on, and there's lots of all the different varieties. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
All the different colors.
Pumpkins and gourds and pumpkin pie, oh my. Do you have a tradition for Halloween? Because Lisa makes potato soup.
Chili.
Well, okay, thank you. We didn't talk about this. That's our argument. My dad always made chili.
Yeah.
Lisa gets into the family. We make potato soup. I want chili on the table.
Well, why don't you have both?
I do. Don't worry about it. You know I'll get my way. I'll be working, so. Well, Kimberly, we have a delicious show ahead
Certainly
of us.
Do.
I'm hungry.
We have Adam Sachs, who, of course, is the editor-in-chief of...
Oh, Sevier Magazine. I said it wrong again.
I say Sever, but Adam will tell us.
I hope he does.
It doesn't matter how you say it. He just wants you to buy the magazine.
I don't know if our listeners realize that this man is something else. For us to have this magazine editor on our show, this is like big time for our 59 million listeners across the country. Don't laugh. Come on. We're serious here today.
So we're going to be talking about the pasta issue of Sever Magazine, the October-November issue, which is absolutely mouthwatering. And we also have with us today Marissa Ross, who is a contributing editor and the official wine columnist for Bon Appetit magazine. She's written a new book, Wine All the Time.
We're going to have some fun with her.
We are. And then we've got Leroy Grubbs and Logan Healy on to talk about the Empty Bowls fundraiser, which will be this Friday night in the Crossroads.
Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Hen House Market. Hen House Market is your local market since 1923. And Kimberly, that says a lot about a local market.
It certainly does. And Jasper?
Yes, Kimberly?
You can't forget, our listeners can't forget, they need to pre-order their turkey for Thanksgiving.
It's just right around the corner, Thanksgiving.
Right around the corner. And of course, those Tippins pies.
And I'm thinking all the delicious fixings with that turkey and pie. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a dangerous Thanksgiving. And right now, it's your local Hen House Market. New crop, delicious Honey Crisp apples, they have arrived, along with all the other fresh produce, and of course, that beautiful Hereford beef. You talk about good beef.
What's the recipe this week?
Kimberly, I think you're going to like this. Now, I'm kind of thinking seafood.
Okay.
And I had this on my mind, and my son-in-law and daughter, of course, my son-in-law from Baltimore.
Jordan.
I'm doing Baltimore crab cakes.
Oh.
And these are very simple because I have been told and taught by the masters in Baltimore, we're simple recipes, just a few ingredients. Uh-huh. So we're not talking a lot of fillers here.
Okay.
We're talking real crab cakes. Make sure you check out my recipe and more at your neighborhood Hen House Markets.
Jasper, do you like pasta?
I could say something right now. Are you kidding me, Kimberly?
I think pasta runs through your veins, right?
Oh, pasta and cannolis, that's my life.
Uh-huh. Well, we were so excited to get our latest issue of Sever Magazine in the mail. It's the pasta issue. And we are so lucky to have the editor-in-chief of Sever on the phone with us this morning from New York City, Adam Sachs. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Happy to be here with you.
Good morning. We are honored to have you on again. And just the cover itself of the magazine, the pasta issue. I mean, and I think before we go any further, Kimberly, we can always bring this up. Let's say how to pronounce the magazine, because I have a version. Kimberly has the correct one, and you have the perfect way of saying it.
Well, my dumb joke is that I don't care how you pronounce it as long as you buy the issue or you know, subscribe. But I think it's pronounced, I say Sever, which is about as close to the proper pronunciation.
Yeah, that's what Kimberly teaches me.
Sever. Mm-hmm.
And most people say Sevier.
Yeah. Or Savior.
It's some weird ones, yeah.
We've heard.
It's Savior sometimes, which is a lot of pressure.
Well, whatever it is, but we're talking pasta, so come on.
That's the main thing, yeah. You forget the word, just you know, you want to eat the cover. So that's
right.
No doubt.
That's the point.
So, Adam, Sevier dedicated its entire October-November issue to pasta, as we said. It's truly a love letter to the world's most perfect food. What was the inspiration behind the issue?
Well, it came from, feeling like there's this thing that we all do love. I mean, it's true that everyone in the office, when you get people talking about it or our contributors and photographers and writers, that it's this universally loved thing. And then, so why not celebrate it? And then I sort of really fell in love with the idea of the challenge of it, you take a topic that is, if you did an issue about Tibet, it would be fascinating and it would be new to most people. You take pasta, and I think people sort of, feel like there's what new can you say about pasta? It's the most covered, beloved, done thing. And so the challenge then is to try to find interesting stories, interesting recipes, beautiful, the context and the culture and the people behind it. So it became a really fun challenge to figure out how can we make a pasta issue that didn't feel like, full of maybe tips you don't really need or just updated versions of Cacio Pepe, which, why mess with the classics? So it became a very sort of obsessive challenge and adventure in trying to get into pasta stories.
Okay, Adam, I have to tell you, there's a couple of great stories in here that I love. One about the corsetti, and we'll come back to that. But Ricardo loves spaghetti, and that was that was actually your article. And just to look at it and see this man, he lives and thinks every day about spaghetti. The man is obsessive about spaghetti.
About dried pasta in general, yeah. So this is a chef and restaurateur named Ricardo Caminini, who has a restaurant called Lido 84, which is right just sort of perched at the edge of Lake Garda in northern Italy. And he, unlike a lot of Italian chefs, is kind of, he pulls from all different regions. So he doesn't just cook, the food of northern Italy or the food of the Garda area. He's obsessed with finding pairing the right dried pasta with the right sauce and making it cling as much as possible. And he just makes these very simple but really beautiful and kind of fascinating dishes. And it's interesting, I think, as an American, because we assume that pasta would have kind of, a central place in a lot of in any Italian restaurant in Italy. But it actually, in fine dining, especially, anything sort of avant-garde, in recent years, it had for a long time been something that you didn't really use. Maybe you would have a homemade or, a house-made fresh pasta. But dry pasta was sort of seen as something for the home, something that families eat. And so Ricardo Caminini really is trying to elevate this Italian product that he loves and find ways to kind of show off the variety and beauty of dry pasta.
And there's no doubt, to me, I mean, the pasta, of course, in an upscale restaurant has to be handcrafted. But for the everyday person who's probably reading the magazine, maybe 85-90% of the Americans who are going to look at this magazine are going to say, hey, it's about dry pasta for me at home, so I'm looking more at the sauce and maybe the highest quality pasta I can find on the market.
Right. Yeah, we have a story about sort of the history and kind of in defense of dry pasta. I mean, I think part of it is just a language issue in that, if you say fresh pasta, so the opposite of fresh is not dry. It's, rancid or spoiled. And dry pasta kind of gets a bad rap because we grow up with boxes of, Kraft macaroni and cheese or whatever, or, some supermarket spaghetti that may not be of great quality. But dry pasta has this great history and lineage, and it really can be a beautiful and kind of artisanally made product. So there's a story about dry pasta, and then also Ricardo in the separate story is kind of a hero of dry pasta.
So, Adam, what's your preference when you're cooking at home with the family, dried pasta or fresh pasta?
I mean, just in terms, I love making pasta. I think there's something like a lot of in-depth cooking projects where you can kind of let your mind wander, and there's something nice about handling, pulling together a dough from a big mound of flour and eggs. But I think the truth is you can make, in a way, when you have really, really good fresh pasta, you see the difference between that and maybe what you can make at home. And then you have really good dry pasta, and it becomes an interesting challenge to think about, how you can get it to the table in the right form and just the right saucing. And I mean, the long answer is I like, or the quick answer is I like both. I probably do more dry pasta just because it's a little faster.
Sure. Sure. It's kind of like making a loaf of challah. That's what I love to do. I love taking making a loaf of challah. Just kind of takes me. It transports me.
But that's talent. I mean, come on. To me, pasta, a simple ingredients. To make a loaf of challah, that's, you have to have a little talent there, Kimberly. I'm going to give you credit on that.
Well, thanks, Jay.
To me, making pasta as a chef, I mean, pasta, water, egg, a little salt. Come on, I'm there.
So, Adam.
Well, we have a story with, there's a guy named Evan Funky who, which is actually the, how to pronounce his name. He has a restaurant called Felix in Venice, California, and he made the stuffed pasta on our cover. And so you talk to him, and he would say, you know, it's one of those a minute to learn, lifetime to master things where he rolled it all out with a long wooden roller, and he really spent years perfecting, you know, getting his dough just right. So I think it's one of those things that it's quick and easy, but to really get the right texture and to be able to be really proficient in it can take a long time.
And Chef Funky is the maestro of Venice, and I love this story. The Savour Test Kitchen director, Stacy Adamondo, right? Traveled to Venice, California to kind of take a master class under the chef.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
Evan is he's an American guy, but he became entranced with the fresh pastas of Emilia-Romagna and Italy in general, and spent over many, many trips and sometimes spent at cooking school in Italy, learned from, you know, professionals, from grandmothers he would go meet, from, he would wander around, he says, and you know, find various strains of interesting stuffed pastas and learn how they're made. Stacy, our test kitchen director, went out kind of embedded with Evan in his pasta laboratory in his restaurant, Felix.
Well, Adam, we have to take a little break. We have to pay for some of this pasta right now. So we're going to come back with you, if you don't mind, and talk more about pasta. Savour Magazine, of course, the pasta issue. This is Jasper Morabile.
And Kimberly Stern.
Don't go nowhere, my friends. We'll be right back here on KCMO.
Talk Radio 103.7 FM, AM 710.
Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Hen House Market. Hen House Market is your local market since 1923. And Kimberly, that says a lot about the local markets.
It certainly does. And Jasper?
Yes, Kimberly?
You can't forget, our listeners can't forget, they need to pre-order their turkey for Thanksgiving.
It's just right around the corner, Thanksgiving.
Right around the corner, and of course, those Tippins pies.
And I'm thinking all the delicious fixings with that turkey and pie. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a dangerous Thanksgiving. And right now, to your local Hen House Market, new crop, delicious Honey Crisp apples, they have arrived, along with all the other fresh produce, and of course, that beautiful Hereford beef. You talk about good beef.
What's the recipe this week?
Kimberly, I think you're going to like this. Now, I'm kind of thinking seafood.
Okay.
And I had this on my mind, and my son-in-law and daughter, of course, my son-in-law from Baltimore.
Jordan.
I'm doing Baltimore crab cakes.
Oh.
And these are very simple because I have been told and taught by the masters in Baltimore, we're simple recipes, just a few ingredients. So we're not talking a lot of fillers here.
Okay.
We're talking real crab cakes. Mm. Make sure you check out my recipe and more at your neighborhood Hen House Markets. Kimberly, we're back talking pasta. I mean, you have found perhaps the best guest and magazine editor to talk with about pasta because, you know what, we're just celebrating National Pasta Month back in October, so it's all about pasta, lady.
And we've got Adam Sachs, who, of course, is the editor-in-chief of Savour Magazine. The October-November issue is all about pasta. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous issue. Adam, as we were talking about in the first part of the interview, it's a love letter to pasta. And you've done a magnificent job, you and your team. What about the world's rarest pasta? Talk about the story in the issue about that.
So there's a pasta that's supposed to be the rarest pasta and in some ways the hardest to make. It's called souffalendru, I think it's souffalendru. I'm mispronouncing that, but it means threads of God. And it's many, many hundreds of very fine, sort of as fine as a human hair, threads of pasta. And it's made by one woman on one hillside in Sardinia. And the catch is that you can have it for free, but you have to take this pilgrimage. You have to walk, I think, 20 miles overnight with a group of fellow travelers. And so you hike through the night, and it's rugged terrain, and you kind of get up to the top of the mountain in this little village as the sun is coming up. And your reward is that you have this pasta in brodo and broth. And I've never tasted it, but we sent a writer, Chris Collin, to do this story that we called By a Thread. because of this idea of its thread-like nature, but also that this is a, you know, a tradition that is hard to keep alive because it's really, it's one family, and right now just one woman in that family who's making it.
Well, we talk about pasta, and going back to the artisan pasta, a few years ago, my good friend Judy Francini in Tuscany sent me my own little corsetti, and I opened up the magazine, and there is the gentleman who actually makes the corsetti, the most famous of all in Italy.
Yeah, this is great. So a writer named Adam Golmer, this is one of those great stories where he wasn't on assignment. He happened to be traveling through Liguria, and he had heard about this guy, Signor Cassoni, who's the corsetti stamp maker of the town of Chiavari, or the village of Chiavari. And he went, and he just found this guy who not only makes... So these corsetti stamps are... It's a stuffed pasta, but you make it with this little wooden stamp that has... you know, some sort of image on it or initials or some sort of design. And it's made by this woodworker named Signor Cassoni, who just has great things to say about, you know, the world and gets up and dances, and they go and have wine together in the middle of the afternoon. It's just a lovely little scene with an interesting guy who is, you know, one little sliver of the kind of much bigger world of pasta in Italy.
Wow. So what's your favorite, besides your story in the magazine, Adam, what's one of your favorite pieces or stories or about pasta here?
I love all of these. I love the story about the, you know, this rare pasta in Sardinia. I love, we have a story called Pesto is a Place, which is sort of a travelogue to another part of Liguria and finding the, you know, the basil, where the basil's grown and where the garlic is grown, and even where the marble is brought up for the mortar and pestle to make the pesto. And this, just this idea that, you know, something that's so kind of universal and you're used to seeing it in a jar, or you make it yourself with whatever ingredients are at hand, has this tradition and context and culture behind it. And I think that's what the whole issue is about, is that, you know, pasta is a thing that we are all familiar with in many ways, but it is this rich and varied, and in Italy especially, you know, this thing that is at the center of so much of their cuisine and culture.
Well, we talk about pasta in various dishes that we're going to use it in. We talk about pasta in restaurants. And Sevier has covered, you know, from old century old recipes and found people in Italy who have mastered the art of it, and going across the country have found sauces to pair with it. But I can only imagine for some of these people what's on the horizon for them and how they, you know, everyday life, do they stay back with their ancient recipes and their ancient ways, or do they move forward with some of these pasta factories? And I know when you all picked these articles out, it must have been a little difficult to choose, you know, who's the top of the top in the world. And, of course, you found them, but it had to have been a little difficult. But my main question with this is, was there a lot of testing in the kitchen? Did you get to eat a lot of the pastas?
We definitely, yeah. There was definitely a sort of general weight gain for the server staff. We didn't add it up. We don't like to talk about it too much, but... yeah, we did a lot of, I mean, you know, obviously the writers, who individual writers and some of the staff members, myself included, did some of the stories. So we traveled and ate, and then we did, you know, some blind tastings of dry pasta in the office. And then when the test kitchen is in the process of developing recipes, we have a story that is sort of five, you know, call them would-be classics. They're pasta dishes that really aren't well known outside of their regions, and they represent some tradition or some ingredient or some way of making or dealing with pasta in their region. So we have five, but to get to that five, we've probably tested 20, and then, you know, each test you're doing a couple times. So there was a lot of pasta, happily, floating around the server offices for many months.
Oh, that's heaven for me. Well, Kimberly, we're getting ready. I mean, I'm looking at the time clock. It's almost over. We're almost finished talking.
We are. Adam, it's always a pleasure to have you on Live from Jasper's Kitchen. We look forward to talking with you next year. Can you give us a little preview of what the December, the next issue is about?
Well, the next issue isn't as sort of themed around one thing like pasta issue. But it's a typical silver story in that it's atypical and it's all over the map. We have stories in Kyoto, we have stories in Spain. There are typical sort of wandering deep dives into food and cultures all over the globe.
Well, we are honored again to talk to you, my friend, And I hope you get to come back on with us again. I know we're always excited when we find out you're going to be a guest. So thanks for your time. I know you're very busy, and it's always
a lot of pasta. I have to go keep eating pasta. So.
There you go. There you go. I know. With deadlines and all, I'm sure pasta will keep you going. So just keep it up. We love the issue. Thank you so much for coming on today. Kimberly, it's all about pasta.
That's right.
Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Henhouse Market. Henhouse Market is your local market since 1923. And Kimberly, that says a lot about the local markets.
It certainly does. And Jasper?
Yes, Kimberly?
You can't forget, our listeners can't forget, they need to pre-order their turkey for Thanksgiving.
It's just right around the corner, Thanksgiving.
Right around the corner, and of course, those Tippins pies.
And I'm thinking all the delicious fixings with that turkey and pie. It's going to be a dangerous Thanksgiving. And right now, it's your local Henhouse Market. New crop, delicious Honey Crisp apples. They have arrived, along with all the other fresh produce. And of course, that beautiful Hereford beef. You talk about good beef. At your neighborhood Henhouse Markets. Kimberly, you have brought in another guest to help us. I mean, seriously, when we're talking about drinking wine, the best guide to drinking without overthinking, wine all the time. That should be wine all the time, just to be everybody's mantra. That should be, this. Here we go.
It's a hashtag, I think. Yeah, we're so lucky to have Marissa Arroz. She's contributing editor and the official wine columnist for Bon Appetit magazine. She's the author of the book we're going to be talking about, Jasper just said, Wine All the Time, The Casual Guide to Confident Drinking. And I think Marissa might be the female equivalent of Kansas City's beloved Doug Frost.
Exactly, there's no doubt. Come on.
What do you think? Okay, Marissa, you have such a fascinating background. You're an award-winning wine writer.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting. Yeah. I'm super stoked to be on the show.
Well, you have a fascinating background. You have a very unusual path. You were an aspiring comedy writer, a celebrity assistant, a blogger to the editor at an editor at Bon Appetit. So how did you get your start writing about wine?
Well, it was crazy. I had this blog that was, and by no means am I trying to compare myself to Larry David, but I had this blog that was sort of a comedy blog that was just my way of writing about wine, or not wine. Sorry, getting ahead of myself. Writing every day and just trying to make fun of my daily life. And my whole thing was all right, if I can find humor in my everyday life and write about it every day, eventually one day I'll be a comedy writer. But slowly but surely, wine became more and more a part of my daily life. And I just loved wine so much that I started a separate blog called Wine All the Time. And I would just write reviews about wine. And I had no formal training or anything like that. I just wanted to keep track of the wines I loved, and no one read it. Virtually there was 14 hits a month on the blog, and I swear that those 14 hits were probably me proofreading my stuff because I'm crazy. And then by some stroke of luck, Sierra Tischgard of Grub Street found it, and she wrote about it for Grub Street with New York Magazine, and then it just sort of blew up. And that was over the course of about 3 years. It was crazy. Very unexpected.
Well, I have to tell you, just looking through the book myself, and I'm going to take out a section for my servers at the restaurant because mainly our restaurant specializes in Italian cuisine, but you go through the French, you go through the Spanish wines, etc. But just in looking at the Italian wine part where you give a very, very brief description. So when my servers are asked something about, Sicilian wines, dark, fruit-forward reds, and oceanic white, sand rock, volcanic rock. You put it all very, very condensed version here for someone who just, it's like talking to the common guy when I'm talking with you.
Thank you. Yeah, I love wine, and it's such an expansive subject, and I can get super dorky and crazy, and no one can understand me when I'm talking about wine on that side of things. But I wanted to create something where anyone could say those things and know enough about wine and understand that, but then if they wanted to, they could say, well, what is an oceanic white? Or what is this soil that you mentioned, or this or that? And then they can dive deeper into that. There's so many wine books in the world that are really, really in-depth, and I just wanted to create something that was more of a springboard for someone that if they wanted to learn about wine, it didn't have to be this hugely academic process. It could be fun. It could be something that anyone could do. And then if they wanted to move on from there, then they totally could.
We're talking with Marissa Ross, who is the contributing editor and official wine columnist for Bon Appetit magazine and the author of the book Wine All the Time. Okay, Marissa, question. What was the first wine you had that made you stop and say, whoa, and sparked your passion for wine?
Well, I mean, it's funny because I was writing about wine when I was just drinking $2 crap wine, like absolute the worst stuff. But the ones that kind of, and I still somehow found inspiration in those. But the one that I guess like really changed my life would be, it's a Beaujolais by a company called Pur, like P-U-R, Maison Pur. And they spell it weird, so I apologize. It's like you never know if it's actually just the initials P-U-R, the way that they put it on the label. But I'd never had a Beaujolais that just didn't taste kind of like candy, like very one-noted.
I almost said Kool-Aid. Sort of
yeah, and this was like so vibrant and just full of cranberry and had this like sort of almost like chiffon texture to it. And I was like, what is this? And in my mind, I was like, oh, you're just spending more than $10 on a bottle of wine. This is what all wines over $10 taste like. But it was a natural Beaujolais, and I think it was like the carbonic maceration, not to get too technical, but, you know, there's all these different things about it. And that wine just kind of like blew my mind, and I had to just seek those wines out from then on out.
All right, Marissa.
And that was in 2013, so not too long ago.
No, not at all. Well, Marissa, I have to put you at the table with Kimberly and I right now. And I know you set the table, and I'm going to let you choose the wine, the food, and the setting for us right now. Now, I love Italian cuisine. So does Kimberly.
Okay. I'll go with that. Okay.
But I want you to choose something because I'm the same way with
I'm
my servers.
I'm opening my wine fridge right now. I'm like, I have a few dishes.
And then I'm going to ask you something after this that you're really going to love, well, our listeners will love. But I want you to just kind of make us feel a little more comfortable because that's the problem. I think people are just afraid, and you talk about that in the book. They're afraid of the server. They're afraid of the sommelier, and they're just, you know, they're standing there frozen. They don't get to choose themselves. So I want you to
Absolutely.
Help me a little bit.
Well, I would have you in my home. I have a big, long wooden table, dining table that I would sit you down at, and I would probably start by serving you. But basically, I would start with a Lambrusco style sparkling wine.
I love it.
But it's lighter. It's by these brothers, the Sausalito brothers, out of northern Italy.
You're talking about Martin Brothers? Is it Martin Brothers?
No, it's I think it's like Poder Sausalito.
Oh, okay,
is like
sure,
what they're
sure,
called,
sure.
I'm pretty sure. But I got it. It's like I'm like, oh, I can only see the bottle, but I can't pronounce it. Anyways, so I'd start with a light style sparkling wine that's either a Lambrusco or something a little bit or a rosé, sparkling like Italian rosé, just to sort of get your taste buds going. I love starting off with sparkling wine. I just think it gets your palate excited and ready to go and cleans it off of anything that's on there, scrubs it all away. And then I would definitely have my husband cook for you guys because he makes his own pasta and he's fantastic at it. I'm spoiled. His mother was born in Italy and passed down all of her amazing pasta making skills. So I would probably have him do, he makes a fantastic spinach and like tomato cream. They call them tortellacci.
Oh, yeah, my favorite tortellacci.
And then I would probably serve it with one of Danilo Marcucci's red wines. Danilo is a winemaker out of Umbria, and he's sort of like this Yoda Batman of natural wines. He lives in a castle. He's very serious, and he makes these just gorgeous Sangioveses that are just really, really drinkable. And with Sangiovese, Sangiovese can kind of go either super herbal and like dark, or it can be on the lighter and fruitier side. And his ride, this really nice wave of being able to complement savory foods while also staying like very drinkable, which for me is always something I really want to serve my guests. Like I want wines that are really drinkable and fun. And if you want to think about them, you can. But if you don't want to think about them and you just want to drink them, that's totally fine too.
I mean, we our producer is looking at us, and I cut this interview, and I don't want to right now. Okay.
The candles are lit. We're going to enjoy this.
We're finishing the interview, and let's just say we had a little bit too much to drink. Now, we're going to take an Uber home, so we don't have to worry about any of that. But the hangover cure, this is unbelievable what you put in print.
Am I allowed to say it? I mean,
why
I don't
not?
Know
Who cares? I mean, this is what it's about with you. Come on.
For me, the hangover cure is you got to wake up and you immediately have to drink a glass of wine. A glass of wine. No, a glass. It's too early here in LA for me. I haven't had enough coffee. You immediately have to drink a glass of water followed by a Coca-Cola, a regular Coca-Cola, preferably out of a glass bottle. Then you need to smoke some weed and either eat leftover pizza or get a burrito. And then you got to go back to sleep. And then you have to repeat the process until you're feeling better. And now the older I get, I find that process takes a lot longer. So I try not to have to be hungover and in that position anymore.
I'm stealing this from you right now, Marissa. Okay, you ready? Godspeed. I love it.
Marissa Ross, you are a stitch. We have to have you back on next year to talk more. Where can they reach your blog?
It's wine-allthetime.com, and you can buy the book Wine All the Time at any major retailer, or just you can hop on Amazon and grab it there too.
I'm telling you right now, you have got to get this book. And Marissa, thanks for taking time out of your morning in LA. You enjoy yourselves, and I'll tell you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm ready for a little sip of wine right now. Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Hen House Market. Hen House Market is your local market since 1923. And Kimberly, that says a lot about the local markets.
It certainly does. And Jasper?
Yes, Kimberly?
You can't forget, our listeners can't forget, they need to pre-order their turkey for Thanksgiving.
It's just right around the corner, Thanksgiving.
Right around the corner, and of course, those Tippins pies.
Oh, at your neighborhood Hen House Markets. Kimberly, I have in front of me an empty bowl.
Mm-hmm. A beautiful empty bowl.
We play a lot and we talk a lot and I talk about eating so much and everything. And we're very, very fortunate.
We are.
And that's what I do for a living. I cook for people. I feed people. I fill people's bowls up. Mm-hmm. But here we have an empty bowl today.
We do.
There's a lot behind this.
There's a whole lot to talk about this empty bowl. And we have Leroy Grubbs, who you started the Empty Bowl fundraiser, didn't you?
Had a very unique opportunity to take up this cause called Empty Bowls. Empty Bowls is actually recognized on a national level. Mm-hmm. And there had been an Empty Bowls event in Kansas City 10 years ago, headed up by Stephen and Nancy Hill. And it fell by the wayside. There's some Empty Bowl events in this community. There's in Wichita, out in Lawrence, over in Grandview. But there wasn't a Kansas City Empty Bowls event.
Right.
So I checked with Stephen and I checked with Red Star, and they said, if you want to lead this up 3 years ago, go for it. So, yes, I took the charge.
And the bowls are empty because, of course,
the purpose is a reminder of those in our community that are not as fortunate as we are. I have joined forces with Harvesters, and it's a fundraiser for Harvesters to help promote the food network that they supply and raise community awareness.
And the cool part about this is for $25, right?
Yes, ma'am.
$25, you get a bowl.
Yeah.
Made by a ceramicist. You're a ceramic artist. And you've got more than 1,000 bowls, unique bowls.
We have literally 1,000 plus bowls donated by artists all over Kansas City from the Art Institute, prominent artists, Stephen Hill. There's many of them. I can't begin to announce.
The list goes on.
Yeah.
And of course, it's this year, it's first Friday, November 3rd at Arts Tech?
Correct. And that's at 1522 Holmes.
Okay.
Starts at 5:30 and there's plenty of parking. It's a first Friday event in November, just a couple weeks away.
And how many people do you expect to attend?
I would expect upwards of 200. This is the third year. We've had a consistent growth each year. I could very easily host 1,000 though, and the original vision was 1,000 plus bowls. So
if I at Jasper's Restaurant were known on Mondays for our lentil soup, and you're looking for something vegetarian, if I give you a 5-gallon container of vegetarian lentil soup, would that help the cause?
That would be absolutely incredible.
Because we want to fill these bowls up.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay, that's what I want to do. I'm going to put this on my calendar, Miss Kimberly.
Okay, done. Done. And people can go online, emptybowlkc.com, to buy tickets. They can come that night.
Yes. There's tickets online for $25. At the night of the event, it's $30 for a ticket. Mm-hmm. So there's two options there. You can get one online ahead of time or at the door.
And of course, you can buy more than one ticket.
I would love for you to bring your family and friends and share, go out online and share this event with all your friends.
Well, people don't realize Harvesters here in Kansas City, they serve 140,000 people per month.
Yes.
I mean, that's a lot of people you think about and how fortunate we are now. We're going into the Thanksgiving season. We're going into the holiday season. It's getting cold outside. You know, and people start thinking, I mean, we're all talk, all food here on the show. And here we have these empty bowls, and we're asking our listeners, all of our friends, that, you know, for a few cents, they can help fill the bowl.
That's right. And Logan, you work with Harvesters, of course. You are the food and fund drive engagement manager, so you're working directly with Leroy, and you work with other people like Leroy in the community. Some of your greatest needs are coming up, the cold months, as Jasper said.
Absolutely. I mean, hunger is a year-round problem that we have in our community, but especially when it gets colder, folks need a hot meal, and Harvesters, as Jasper said, feeds over 140,000 people each month. 1 in 7 people in Harvester's 26-county region that covers the Kansas City area, 1 in 7 people are going hungry each day. They're missing 65.2 million meals annually. And so events like Empty Bowls Kansas City are very important, not just for the money that we're able to raise at the event. At Harvesters, we can turn $1 into 3 meals, but also to raise the awareness so people are grateful. You know, they have a warm or cold cup of soup in a nice ceramic bowl, but not everyone is so lucky. And so we at Harvesters are really thankful for all of our community partners, and especially Leroy with this very unique and cool event to engage people not only in giving food and money, but also giving voice and time as well.
And you know, you make a really important point about, you serve a 26-county area, which is staggering when you think about it.
Wow.
When you think about it, and it extends on both sides of the state line.
That's correct. We have our facility in Kansas City, Missouri, out kind of near the stadiums, Kauffman and Arrowhead. We also have a facility in Topeka, Kansas. So we cover northwest Missouri and northeast Kansas. But again, we in that region, there's nearly 365,000 people that are food insecure. And that means that they might be getting a meal today, but they don't know when, where, or if they're getting a meal tomorrow.
And Leroy, I would assume that it's pretty easy to get your peers, your fellow artists, to say yes.
Oh, yes. The opportunity to just create something and make a contribution. Artists in general are generous. Ceramic artists have, most significant problem a ceramic artist has is, what do we do with all this stuff we want to make? And we give it to our mom, we give it to anybody that's unsuspecting. And of course, creating this event has given me a way and a purpose for making these bowls and sharing them with the people in the community at large.
So the event on November 3rd, is it just bowls, or is it more?
It is actually an art event. It just goes on, and in the last few weeks, it seems to all come together. So it's just amazing. There's many surprises as it comes together.
So you have an art raffle.
We actually have an art raffle, silent bid also.
Well, and some of your sponsors, Arts Tech, of course, Red Star Studios, yes. Love Red Star, KC Art Institute,
correct.
Brackers, Good Earth Clay, Star Graving Solutions, and KC UR, and you probably have more that are coming in. So.
Correct. I can't run down the whole list. I'm actually incredibly fortunate. The best part about it is I've got chili coming from BB's Barbecue, if you like chili. Mm. I have
lentil
Michael
soup.
Smith's lentil soup coming from Jasper's.
What from Michael?
Last year he did a cold soup, which was fantastic.
So could you still use, the event's a week away. If some of our listeners wanted to contribute some soup?
Because it is a public event, it has to be made in the kitchen.
Okay.
That's the best part about it. If there's another restaurant that wants to contribute and have a soup tasting or a chili cook-off, I mean, I would love to see this event develop into something bigger and bigger each year. As it has gone, it really has continued to grow each year.
Yeah. I'm thinking of like a chili cook-off with Slow Food Kansas City. We can get them involved, Kimberly, and get the bowls involved.
Absolutely.
Oh, this is really good. I'm so glad you all came in today. I mean, you know, here we are. You're giving back to the community. And 140,000 people. I don't mean to keep saying that, but people must remember that in Kansas City. It's just, you know, this is not something that just be in the back of our, you know, oh, let's just put this away and not talk about it. We need to discuss it.
We did over $1,800 in a donation to Harvesters last year, and I expect that to continue to grow.
And again, it's next Friday, November 3rd.
Correct.
Already.
First Friday, yeah.
And it's at Arts Tech, which is 1522 Home Street, down the crossroads.
Right.
And you can go online, emptybowlkc.com, buy a $25 ticket.
Yes.
You can buy a $30 ticket at the door. And, of course, you're encouraged to bring friends, family. And what an evening. What an
correct.
Evening. Leroy.
Thank you.
Logan,
thank you
so much for coming in. Jasper.
We appreciate you guys. Thanks so much. I'm glad I got to be involved a little bit because it makes you feel good. You know, we have a lot to do. And
thank you so much. You guys are really awesome.
Thank you
so much.
Empty Bowls. Don't forget about it, my friends.